This is the oral history interview for the 50th anniversary of the Political Science Department at Clemson University with William Lasser on August 2nd. Do you consent to being recorded today?
Yes.
And then would you please state your name and date of birth?
William Lasser, November 25th, 1956.
And we are located at Brackett Hall on Clemson University's campus today. And we're going to start with our general personal questions. When and where were you born?
I was born in Buffalo, New York.
And then did you grow up at Buffalo, and did that change at any point in your childhood?
No, I grew up in Buffalo until I went off to college.
And where did you go to college?
I was an undergraduate at MIT and then graduate school at Harvard.
And do you think that your favorite academic subjects growing up impacted where you decided to go to school or what you did for school?
Not where I decided to go to school at first and not what I was studying at first, but eventually, I think. My mother, in particular, was very passionate about politics. I remember mostly from my early days that she absolutely despised Richard Nixon. My parents had lived in California, and so they were acquainted with Nixon from his campaigns there. Politics was always being discussed in our house, and it was always on TV. And so I can remember 11 years old when the Democratic National Convention was in Chicago, and I remember Kennedy's assassination. So there were political things going on early on. So I really loved politics, but I went off to study medicine and then came back to Buffalo, worked in a hospital for the summer, and after about a day or two realized I didn't want to be a doctor, didn't like the sight of blood or any of those things. And so I just went through a whole bunch of different options. I was majoring in chemistry and then eventually decided why don't I get paid to do what I was doing anyway in my spare time, which was politics. And so I became a double major in political science and chemistry and then went to graduate school in political science.
And do you think your career goals from your childhood changed? They obviously changed when you got out of your undergrad. But do you think you were influenced heavily by your childhood for those goals? Or
I think so. I mean, for sure, my interest in politics was a hobby, really. So I know I sound old talking about all these things, but in 1976, I was in Cambridge for the summer, and I bought myself a little black and white TV because I wanted to watch two things. That was the Summer Olympics and the political conventions. And I really distinctly remember walking back from a job I had, a day job in the chemistry department, and hurrying back to turn on the TV. In those days, the conventions were kind of interesting, and thinking, why don't I get paid to do the kinds of things that those people were doing on TV. I didn't really think political scientists quite yet, but maybe political journalism. I was always a journalist in college and high school. And so that was my first kind of interest, was to be a political journalist. And then eventually, but at the same time, I had always kind of thought about being a professor from when I got to college. So in that sense, I went from being a medical professor to a law professor to a chemistry professor to a political science professor.
And that's what you did immediately after graduate school? Okay. And when did you end up coming to Clemson?
So right out of graduate school, I came here in 1983, and I've been here ever since.
And do you recall what it was like going through the recruitment process or getting recruited by Clemson at all?
Well, in those days, there was a paper newsletter which listed all the jobs. There were 12 in my subfield for tenure track jobs. So the job market for academics then as now, maybe worse now, but it was not great then. And I got one of those 12 jobs. So I thought, well, might as well come here for however long, a year or two, look around, go somewhere else. And I kept looking around, and I even had an offer or two and turned them down because Clemson was working really well. So I stayed.
Do you think there was anything else that drew you to Clemson's campus at all other than just a newsletter?
No, I mean, honestly, when I interviewed, I thought Clemson was a private school. I knew it from the football because they'd won the national championship in 81. And then, of course, had the scandals in those days. So they were in the news a lot. But I thought it wasn't named for a state. So, you know, kind of naively thought, well, it must be a private school. And only after I started really looking into it when they offered me an interview, did I discover it was a state university. But I will say the people here, it was a much quieter, smaller place then, really in some ways too small. So we ended up living in Greenville, and we've lived there since then. Never moved to Clemson. But I liked the being away from the East Coast. I mean, being from Buffalo, it's in New York, but it's really very Midwestern. Mm-hmm. And I think that in some ways, the pace of life and that type of thing was more like what I grew up with than what I encountered in Boston or New York or DC.
And when you got here, what were the initial courses that you were teaching?
Yeah, so I always taught when I've been in, except when I many years was in an administrative role, but when I've been in the department, constitutional law, that was kind of the bread and butter course. In the beginning, we taught more, the teaching load was higher. So I tended to teach 101 or 1010, American National Government. I taught that for many years. And then it was always a kind of smattering of other, typically law-related courses. I remember I had a course early on called Administration of Justice, which I didn't really know that much about. So I had to kind of learn that and get a bunch of visitors, guest lecturers, that type of thing. But common law was always that, and 1010 were the main ones.
And was there a particular course that you would like deem as your favorite from all of your years of teaching here?
Yeah, that's difficult. I mean, constitutional law has always been the bread and butter course. I think it's more difficult to teach it now than it was in years past. Partly that's the court's fault. Partly that's the polarization on the court has made it much more difficult to teach that course and for students to understand, because it's every case has not just two sides, but two completely different ways of looking at the world. And that's hard for students to absorb. Partly the students have changed. They're not as used to reading long, detailed passages. So, but I would say over time, that's certainly my favorite course to teach. I've had some individual courses that I've loved. So I was director of the Honors College for 15 years, and a couple of times taught a course on spies and spy novels, which was I loved it. It was a hobby of mine, but being able to bring that together with some political science and lots of history was a really interesting honors seminar too.
Do you have a student or specific anecdote you can recall about teaching that you would like to share just in general?
Yeah, I won't name names. I guess that's okay. But I think one of the things that comes to mind is a graduate student who was actually in education, and she had a very, I would say, sheltered upbringing, and wanted to learn more about political philosophy. And so we did a one-on-one reading course. And it just sort of opened her eyes. I mean, just her reading all of these different viewpoints that she hadn't been exposed to. And as a professor, I don't pick a viewpoint. I just sort of lay it out for students, and she just absorbed it. And it was very exciting. And I think one of the reasons I stayed at Clemson in those early years was that coming from Harvard as a graduate student, I felt like I wasn't really making much of a difference in the students' lives. I mean, they were coming in very privileged kinds of situations. They were at a top school. They were going to top law schools or whatever they were doing. And that was an example where you could really point to someone and say, you know, I helped open, I mean, she opened her eyes and then absorbed all this material. So that's certainly one. Mm-hmm. I've had a number of sort of constitutional law classes, particular semesters that are very memorable. Mm-hmm. One involved just a group of five or six students, some of whom were very conservative, some of whom were very liberal, and they argued with each other the entire semester, but in a very academic and civilized sort of way, and just doing that. I could tell you a few other kind of stories. I had a very interesting, I don't want to take too much time to, but so, because I have to set up the story a little bit. It was back in the 1990s, and I was teaching a course on the concept of rights. It may have been around the time of the bicentennial of the Bill of Rights, I'm not sure. And for a Friday class, I had scheduled to start teaching a book called Rights Talk by a professor at Harvard Law School. A fairly conservative professor, but the argument was a really interesting one, which was that we talk too much about rights and we don't talk enough about responsibilities. In a nutshell, that was really her argument. And I came into class that morning and there was a big scandal involving some football players who were accused of sexually assaulting one or more women. I don't remember the details. And the students were talking about it. And as I listened before class without really saying anything, the women were, of course, talking about a woman's right to be free from sexual violence, obviously. And the men were talking about due process rights and the right to be innocent until proven guilty and this type of thing. And I said to the students, well, I think this issue is important enough. Everyone's talking about it on campus that we should talk about it instead of the material for the course. I kind of wanted to distract them a little bit. And so I said, we're going to talk about this issue, but I don't want anyone to use rights or the concept of rights. And at first they didn't know what to say. At first they just sort of looked at each other because it was very difficult. I stopped them a couple of times when they got into rights. And by the end of that 45 or 50 minute class, both, particularly the male students, were talking about responsibility. We're talking about how can they help fix the problem. And I thought it was just an extraordinary. And then I said, this is the argument in Rights Talk. You know, we'll talk about it more on next Monday. But I'll never forget that class. That was a sort of extraordinary one. And as a little bit lighter side, because it's one of my favorite stories, I was teaching political theory, which is something else I taught, modern political thought. And we were teaching Machiavelli. There's a story Machiavelli tells about a prince called named Agathocles, ancient Greek world somewhere, Syracuse, I think. And at one point, Agathocles calls all the nobles of the city together for a meeting and has them all killed. And Machiavelli comments on this, and it just so happened that the day we talked about that was the day that President of Clemson was having this massive fight with the faculty senate, and it was President Prince. And I thought, I don't know if the students got it, but I thought that was the funniest thing, that he should just call the faculty senate together like Agathocles and read Machiavelli's Prince. But fortunately, he was a wonderful, wonderful person, President Prince, and didn't do that. But I did tell President Prince that story many years later when I saw him at a luncheon.
And after your initial perspective and then having been here since 1983, have you noticed a lot of change within the department? And is it like obviously good change or everything like that?
Yeah, the department has changed a lot and Clemson has changed a lot. And I think that's one of the gratifying things about having been here for so long and why I stayed and why I look back on my career. I'm not done yet, but, you know, as having accomplished some things because I was part of that. Particularly in my administrative role, but also as chair of the department in particular, also in the honors college role. But even as a professor, it was a much smaller department. It had been really a kind of service department. It had been just supporting the technical fields with their general education courses. That was the bulk of our work maybe in the 60s and 70s, and it was changing, and I was hired the same year as Dave Woodard, and as part of an effort to sort of move toward a department that was more research focused, not to give up the teaching focus, but to balance those things. And so over the years, I think that trend has continued. The department has grown. It's become a much stronger and deeper department in terms of, I think, that balance between teaching and research.
Would you mind commenting on just, we became a R1, Carnegie R1 research institution. Do you mind commenting on like any particular projects or anything that you felt was like in line with that R1 status?
Well, departments like political science are at a little bit of a disadvantage when it comes to certain aspects of that. There are some big grants from, for example, National Science Foundation for political scientists. And we've gotten some of those. Some of my colleagues have gotten grants of that nature. But it's harder, particularly because we are not a PhD department in political science. But I think that what we've done is attract people, you know, who are doing the kind of work, often not necessarily big numbers in terms of large grants and big projects, but who are specialists and focused and doing really important work in particular areas.
And do you think your time in so many other departments, because you did so many other different majors and degrees and everything, impacted the way that you were able to help this department in particular? Or
I think coming from sort of the Ivy League kind of perspective, I think that probably is more so than coming from the science perspective, because my own work isn't particularly scientific or quantitative. And I think that's in part because when I was studying chemistry and political science, I could sort of see, I used to say, I've seen what a real science is. And we can do that in certain respects, but not to the extent that I think obviously something like chemistry can do. So I kind of went the other way a little bit more theory focused, more history focused, still very analytical, I think, and empirical, but not necessarily strictly quantitative. Now, some of my colleagues obviously do that kind of work, but I don't think I brought that so much to the department. But I think I did bring a focus throughout my career at Clemson on our top students. And so I started, I think around 1985, the Political Science Departmental Honors Program. That was my first introduction to honors. But that was, in a way, the natural environment that I was used to. As I said before, I mean, part of what attracted me to Clemson was I wasn't only dealing with a narrow base of students. I liked the broader group because some of them just had extraordinary talent and have done great things, but maybe had to not only discover it, but then have the confidence to build the confidence in them to go. One of our alums who went to Harvard Law School was very, I would say, worried. I mean, can I really go to Harvard? And I was like, yeah, you can. And she did, and is still doing very well. But I think that emphasis on our top students has really been something that my career has really been all about. Because I went to, after being, really at the same time as being chair, or interim chair of the department, I was the first director of the National Scholars Program, which is Clemson's top undergraduate scholarship program, or one of them now. And because others have been created since then, and then directing the Honors College itself.
What do you think Clemson has in store for its future regarding political science careers, research, or maybe even graduate school programs? And is there any aspect you feel like we're leading towards specifically?
Well, we don't have, as I said before, a PhD in political science, and I think it would be very difficult to establish one, even if the decision were made at any level that we should do that, because the job market for PhDs in political science, I don't think really justifies another PhD program, particularly in South Carolina. I think it'd be difficult to justify that and difficult to get it through the process locally and at the state level. But what I think is really interesting is that we have reabsorbed the public administration program and absorbed the policy studies PhD program. And I think those provide the potential to continue to grow the links between political science and the other disciplines on campus. It's something I've always been an advocate of, but something that's been difficult, I think, to establish in the past is having our department be more connected, for example, to the departments that do various forms of health studies, biology, public health, et cetera, from a perspective of health policy. And the same might be true for energy policy and the connections to the various departments that are working on or environmental policy. So I think the department has that potential to develop in that direction. I think that will take a lot of development and convincing, but you know, it's been done before that people have ideas and they get done. So that's the most exciting potential path for the department, because I think it fits Clemson's mission. It would link Clemson to the things that really are foremost. And even some of the big grants and studies that are done in the science departments and technology departments could have policy components and implications. So I think that's one area that I think is there. Political science also attracts, I think, not only really good students, but students who want to make a difference. And that's something that in the Honors College was really important to me. And we started the Global Policy Scholars Program there. And that's a program that Dr. Jeff Fine and I have worked on for more than a decade. And it's not a coincidence that that's a political science-based program, because I think the students, whether they want to directly go into policy in the narrow sense, government policy, or whether they just want to change the world, you know, they have to understand the world and they have to understand how change occurs. And so we have both attracted a lot of poli sci majors who are honor students, and then also have a lot of students who didn't start out in political science, but became double majors or minors in political science, or have gone on into policy-related fields. So I think that policy link is a really important one, I think, for the department.
Just like being more interdisciplinary and
exactly
being able to link together the way that political science works with other majors and minors.
Right, and a barrier to that, in some ways, is that at the national level, political science and policy are related, but they're not the same. They're different conferences, mm-hmm. in a sense. So I think bridging that gap would be easier if that were not the case. Mm-hmm. But I think it can, you know, it is being and can be further connected, and bring those students into the department as well.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate you participating in the 50th anniversary of the Political Science Department at Clemson University. And then, okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.